year, either digging it up or burning it. They had, I think, 2 to 3 water retention ponds they had set up.
That's Chris Lovejoy. Out of everyone I spoke with, no one had a closer view of the cleanup at BioLab than Chris and his business partner, Stephanie Donnelly.
You see the state of all of our...
All the vegetation.
And that was our thing when we were talking to them about the land and things like that, and our push for them to just buy the land.
Their disaster response shop, Service Master by Lovejoy, sat right across from the plant. They've now moved to the next town over. But after the fire, their equipment was trapped in that warehouse, rusting and unusable. From their property, they watched the cleanup unfold for months.
Yeah, the whole road lined with tanker trucks.
You could see the concrete slab where the burned-down BioLab warehouse used to be. There's no activity over there now, but according to Chris, it looks less like remediation and more like they were literally burying the problem.
They've been putting concrete on top of something, so I'm assuming they've just... They're doing this to the point where they're going to bury it all, put concrete over it, and then say everything's fine, which is pretty much what it looked like they did 20-some-odd years ago, and then the county bought the land.
Here's what the official record says is going on. EPA and state regulators declared the site safe enough to end the overnight shelter-in-place orders 3 weeks after the fire. Here's Jose Negron with the EPA.
Now it's a matter of dealing with the residual of the chemicals that are non-hazardous and the cleanup, which is essentially going to be more like a construction site. So a lot of dust, and that's going to be the main concern. Nothing of hazardous.
Question over here.
Nothing hazardous.
Nothing of hazardous.
Question over here.
Nothing of hazardous.
What we're going to talk about now is how the EPA knows that, what tools they used, and what tools they could have used to decide that for the community around BioLab, there was nothing hazardous. I'm Pamela Kirkland, and this is Manufacturing Danger, the BioLab story.
Radio for Quinn 19.
Quinn 19.
Everything's 10-4 location. We're going to blow a little bit of smoke out of the room. We'll be going available shortly.
Quinn 19, that's 10-4. When you return to service, we're going to be placing you en route to a mutual aid call in Rockdale with the rest of Company 19, Battalion 2.
I'm clear. Radio, I'll be here for a couple more minutes.
This is a call for mutual aid to DeKalb County Fire Rescue that day. On the morning of September 29, 2024, as first responders tried to contain the fire at BioLab, calls for help started to come in. Rockdale County needed backup. Fire crews from neighboring departments were asked to join the response. But it wasn't just firefighters being called in. Law enforcement, too, was asked to step into the smoke. But for DeKalb County Sheriff Melody Maddox, the alert didn't come from dispatch first. She saw it in her own backyard.
I didn't get the call. I was at home. I'm only about, I live probably about a mile and maybe 2 miles at the most from the BioLab. And I was getting ready to go out with my cousin, and I kept saying, what is this? You could smell it. But I'm thinking it's nothing. And then all of a sudden I go outside and I'm like, what in the world is going on?
If you've heard season one, you know this story.
This is not a one-time event. This is not a two-time event. My aunt passed away with lung issues, and I watched as her neighbors one by one succumb to this deadly thing.
I'd been trying to get Sheriff Maddox to tell even more of the story she'd shared with state legislators when she finally came to the studio. She told me the whole story, and there's a reason why we're going to hear it again. By the time her commander called, Sheriff Maddox already knew something was wrong.
Big black cloud or whatever. Then the phone calls start. I'm like, what is this? And then that's when my commander called and said, hey, Rockdale County is asking for our assistance. They've had a blow up at the BioLab. And immediately I'm like, are you freaking kidding me again?
For her, the sight of another fire at BioLab wasn't just shocking. It was personal. In 2004, she helped evacuate her aunt from senior housing near the plant.
And then I started, you know, getting a little emotional because I started thinking about, you know, my aunt who's no longer here, who had to endure it 20 years prior to this one. And it was just crazy. And everybody was everywhere and all hands was on deck because that was big.
She says the evacuation back then was difficult, especially trying to get seniors and older adults out of their homes to safety.
She was living in some housing projects not far from the BioLab along with her neighbors. We had to try to get those people out. And it was really sad because there were others that had nowhere to go. So I have another aunt who was much older who had a house, and she actually took in people from that particular neighborhood because they had nowhere else to go.
She says her aunt developed lung problems as a result of the fire. And she says she watched as her aunt's neighbors also seemed to get sicker.
And, you know, years later, it became a medical issue. Now, can I prove it? I can't because I'm not a doctor. But I do know for a fact that the BioLab explosion had something to do with a lot of the health issues in that particular community because a lot of the elderly and younger individuals took sick.
Two decades later, with all of this swirling in the back of her mind, Sheriff Maddox had to decide whether to send her own deputies into a disaster she was all too familiar with.
How did you come to the decision? What was weighing on you that day?
The fact that I have to make my people to endure that. I have to send my office, my deputies out there. But we don't fall back when another agency need assistance. And we knew that they needed assistance up and down I-20, all the side streets. So now I'm thinking about the safety and security of, you know, my folks. I got to protect them as well.
That decision took a toll on her.
So for me as the leader and the sheriff, it was very draining. My psyche was just all over the place. And I did have to go through some counseling because I'm like, we're doing this again. But this time I'm fully involved as the sheriff, whereas the last time I was not involved, but here I'm as the first responder, and I have to respond because that's what we do. We took an oath to protect and serve our community, and we're not going to back down.
DeKalb County was just one of many neighboring counties that responded to Rockdale's call for help. Fire departments and hazmat teams from Atlanta, Newton County, Henry County, Social Circle, and elsewhere showed up. What none of them knew was what chemical cloud they were walking into or how to keep themselves safe in it.
They had the mask, you know, but they weren't even sure if that was enough for the chemicals that was there because they did not know. And when you ask them, like, well, what was in it? And they tried to say, well, it was pool supplies. No, that was more than just pool supplies. It was something else that was in there. And again, they're not exposing it. And I don't think that's fair either for BioLab to not expose in order to protect those that's still trying to help them.
Documents back up what Sheriff Maddox is saying. In the days after the fire, Rockdale County, BioLab, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, and Georgia's Environmental Protection Division established a joint incident response, what they called Unified Command. It took 3 days just to decide that the EPA would sit at the head of the Unified Command. Meanwhile, sitting on the ground was an EPA tool, which could have been telling Sheriff Melody Maddox and all the other public safety first responders what they were dealing with. It's a plane, a single-engine Cessna that can map chemical plumes from above in real time as the smoke is billowing. It's called the Airborne Spectral Photometric Environmental Collection Technology, or ASPECT. And I spoke with one of the people who knows what this plane can do best.
The ASPECT program got started about 3 days after 9/11 when the director of...
That's Robert Crowdle. He's a former EPA contractor. He served as the agency's data quality manager for ASPECT. When I first met him, he handed me a stack of old EPA reports he'd saved for me. Unfortunately, they don't live online anymore. But lucky for me, He still had them handy.
I was a senior person in the group to write the software. There's about a million lines of code. It's only second to the Space Shuttle Columbia I heard had a million lines of code. So we're up in that range.
He retired a few years ago. But today, he is the public face of a group of retired scientists speaking out about EPA's handling of data after chemical disasters, a whistleblower. Robert says ASPECT was used at BioLab's 2004 fire in Conyers. It also went to Westlake, Louisiana in 2020 after the fire at that BioLab plant. But in 2024, it stayed grounded.
It has to be deployed by an on-scene coordinator. It normally should be deployed in an hour and get there as rapidly as possible, because for a chemical accident, you want to get there immediately, because that's the worst time for breathing toxic air materials. It's immediately after the beginning of a plant fire.
Robert Crowdle says that was a missed opportunity in Conyers. Remember, it took days just to coordinate the emergency response.
Like that. Yeah. How helpful could that plane?
Oh, it would be immediately helpful, because what ASPECT does is it goes to the site immediately. It passes over the site, and you can immediately, it's not a history lesson. You can immediately warn the public. The police can go to their houses and say, get out of here. We have a chemical plume coming your way. It's hazardous. You shouldn't stay in your house, that's the kind of information that ASPECT gives.
It's exactly what Sheriff Melody Maddox wanted as she sent her deputies into danger. The EPA's on-scene coordinator decided to deploy a different tool instead, the Trace Atmospheric Gas Analyzer, or TAGA. It's alphabet soup. It's a mobile laboratory that measures chemicals at ground level. The EPA told me it was an operational decision to send TAGA instead of ASPECT. In their words, TAGA was the appropriate resource because it provides the ground-level data local officials need for public health decisions. Robert disagrees. I called him back to tell him what the EPA had told me.
In that email, it said that TAGA is best at monitoring chlorine. And I know ASPECT is your specialty, but I'm just curious, is that true?
Well, it's really not. What TAGA does, TAGA is used for Superfund sites.
Superfund sites are places with deep histories of pollution, old factories, power plants. It takes years for a place to achieve Superfund status. Chemical emergencies are not Superfund sites. The ASPECT plane is housed just outside Dallas, Texas. And while the single-engine plane is not exactly fast, it can be on site within a day.
It's very slow. It takes about 6 hours to get over to Atlanta or in that area.
The fire broke out on September 29, 2024. We know that. By the time the TAGA bus began sampling on October 5th, nearly a week had gone by. But in a statement, the EPA cited TAGA's rapid deployment capability as part of the reason it was picked over the ASPECT plane. So the question remains, why? Why did the EPA keep what Robert Crowdle says was arguably the better tool for telling first responders and Conyers residents what was in that towering dark cloud on the ground? One likely factor: EPA's early decision-making was based on BioLab's estimate that 40,000 pounds of chemicals were reacting inside the warehouse. That number shaped the agency's early calculations of how the smoke might spread, and that became one of the reasons the EPA chose to deploy the TAGA bus. But that number was probably a vast underestimate. Federal investigators now say the site held nearly 14 million pounds of oxidizers in total. We can't say how much of that actually burned. The EPA had other sensors that should have been sampling in the meantime. They had problems too. Roving air monitor samples were thrown out because instruments failed calibration. The agency's remote monitoring system, known as Viper, is notorious for data communication losses. Some fixed stations reported damaged equipment. One station didn't have a chlorine sensor. Most of those issues were resolved within a few hours or days. Robert Crowdle says even if all of the systems had been working, the data they collected might not have gotten into the right hands anyway.
So you use all these things in conjunction. They're not stovepipe. And that's one of the problems I have with EPA. EPA has this guy over here doing modeling and this guy doing aspect and this guy on the ground. They never talk to each other. And so it's very disjointed. All these responses are completely disjointed.
There's a very real possibility that after Robert Crowdle retired, no one was left at the EPA who really knew the full potential of the aspect plane in a chemical emergency. That's according to an EPA report. The EPA stands by the air monitoring data in Conyers, saying it, quote, offered a comprehensive view of air quality. The EPA obviously wasn't the only one testing as part of the official response. Biolab also brought in its own contractors, and those companies have their own track records. One name stood out, CTEH, the Center for Toxicology and Environmental Health. CTEH describes itself as a scientific consulting firm known for rapid responses to environmental emergencies.
When there's been a significant event, it disrupts people's lives. Our ability to get out quickly, get a handle on the situation, help our client recover from it, help communities recover from it, impacts people in very personal ways.
That's a promotional video from the company. CTEH has built its brand on readiness, response, and recovery. But their role isn't always clear to the communities that they enter.
This is a company that began working for a lot of train companies that were having toxic derailments. They advertise themselves as kind of the go-to firm.
ProPublica investigative reporter Sharon Lerner has done a lot of reporting on this company and its history.
They do air monitoring and testing, and also that they serve as consultants in legal cases that might follow some of these disasters. And you can see that combination of things could potentially get very problematic very quickly.
That dual role of testing the air residents breathe while also providing data that can help companies defend themselves in court has made CTEH a controversial player in disaster response.
CTEH has gone back and deleted this part of its website, but some years ago, the way it explained how it handles data gathering at toxic chemical sites on its website was it kind of promoted its ability to shield its clients from liability.
In East Palestine, Ohio, after a Norfolk Southern train derailment in 2023, CTEH handled indoor air testing and ran the hotline for sick and worried residents. That's where Sharon's reporting comes from. When CTEH arrived on scene, some residents actually thought they worked for the EPA.
They were among the folks who arrived immediately, you know, in the days after the train derailment and the toxic explosion that happened afterwards. And it wasn't clear because they arrived together with people from the EPA that the residents thought they were just the EPA. They didn't realize it was a company that was paid for by the company that was responsible for the derailment.
ProPublica reporting found that CTEH's tests were short, limited in scope, and often used to reassure the public everything was fine, even when independent experts said the methods were inadequate. Biolab knows CTEH well. After a 2020 fire at that Louisiana plant, CTEH billed Biolab more than $1.3 million. When Biolab didn't pay the invoices, CTEH sued, The case ended in a messy settlement. So when records show Biolab quietly brought CTEH back after the 2024 Conyers fire, it raises questions. Why would a company rehire a contractor it fought so bitterly in court just a few years earlier? In an email from the company, CTEH told me they do not comment on legal matters past or present, and that Biolab is best suited to answer any questions about contractors and work related to their Conyers site. The report compiled by CTEH only addressed the safety of workers at the Biolab site during the 2024 accident. From the EPA's monitoring decisions to the contractors that Biolab brought in to the confusion among first responders, the question of who to trust has hung over Conyers since the fire. Cheryl Garcia, our resident open records expert, thinks even the federal standards that guide testing fall short.
Yeah, so thank you for your inquiry regarding the criteria used to determine the safety of Rockdale County's drinking water. And then he tells me chlorine and turbidity and pH, total organic carbon. And then he went on to just gave me their reports, which I have somewhere. But he tested adherence to the EPA standards. That is the root of the problem, is the EPA.
Cheryl says the water samples that she got back from Rockdale County were only looking for chlorine, and she blames that on the EPA.
Okay, so you have all these chemicals on fire, and then you have water, and the water drives the chemicals into the ground. What's in the ground, and where has it gone? So, I mean, I don't know if this will be a Superfund cleanup site or what, but I don't trust EPD or EPA at all, because they were so silent for so long. It was like they were going, la, 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 looking at the air.
EPD is Georgia's Environmental Protection Division, but Cheryl believes that the standards aren't rigorous enough. And that's the reason why agencies aren't able to explain why residents say they are sick. Keep this in the back of your mind, because we'll dig more on the testing that Cheryl's talking about later this season. But next time on Manufacturing Danger, the Biolab story, we'll pull back the curtain on Biolab's parent company, Kick Consumer Products.
What S&P flagged is that over the next few quarters, their liquidity is going to really tighten. That means that Kick needs more money.
The financials of the biggest company you've never heard of. That's next episode. Manufacturing Danger, the Biolab story, is a production of Georgia Public Broadcasting. This podcast was written by me, Pamela Kirkland. Grant Blankenship is our senior editor. GPB's podcast team includes Sandy Malcolm, Jeremy Powell, Jake Cook, and Mark Davenport. For more, visit gpb.org/podcasts.